It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are sitting here waiting for the current bottle of gas to sputter out. If you listen carefully, you can actually hear it. Hang on. Yeah, that's enough audience abuse with the moving microphone. So, but it'll be gone here. Greetings. From the not-quite-frigid, the fabulous Horn Studios in the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Some of you may have seen my posting earlier today. And I posted a picture of the clock that hangs on the wall here. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. That hangs on the wall here in the studio. That's Agnes laughing in the background. We are fighting back against the brutal cold by laughing and being happy together. Some people made the mistake, I guess, of thinking that I was posting a photograph of what the temperature was outside, because you know it said 36.3.
It was 9.
And at that point in time, yeah, it was 9 outside, but it was 36.3 in the studio. I can happily announce that we have we've got the temperature up in here by about 20 degrees, so it's 56, and it shouldn't be a total disaster trying to get through 3 hours of radio, which I assure you, Brother Deacon Asa, is not naked radio right now. We are, let's see, math being math, that's 10 plus 940. We are 60 days away, at the very least, from the next iteration of Naked Radio on the Horn.
Oh, a lot more than 60.
Yeah, and probably a lot more than 60, as Agnes points out. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Hot and heavy, well, I don't know how hot, on both streams aboard the Moran Brain Train. Remember, kids, shitting on a 10,000-year-old civilization is totally cool, so long as Jesus says so. And sent you there to protest a woman's right to autonomy over her own body. Yes, I got a sneaking suspicion, what with this being Moran Monday, we're going to spend some time talking about that. But we also have to do something else, and to wit, we begin every program with gratitude. What I mean by that is we thank our subscribers, people. And you know, subscribers isn't even the right word. This is just those members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who set it and forget it, and thereby managed to knock out about a quarter of the month's funding in any given month. And so thanks go out. Let me go back to Saturday. Thanks go out to our buddy Dave in Talibandiana, to Mike in Cascadia, to Joe. Thank you, Joe, very kindly. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Sharon. And thank you to David. And thank you to Joseph. And thank you to Brock. Yesterday, thanks to our friends at West Mesa. Thanks to Vincent, Thanks to Dr. John. Thanks to Bernice. And thank you to Carl. Then today, thank you to Shadow Mountain. I think that's David. And thank you very kindly to Joan in Tallahassee. Those are the subscribers for the 19th, the 20th, and the 21st. We're all set for the Super Bowl now. The only problem being that it's going to have an asterisk with it after yesterday's championship games because the officiating was so godforsaken terrible, there's no way of actually knowing if either of the teams in the Super Bowl should actually be there but for the screw-ups by the officiating crews. They were great games to watch. Yes, both of the teams I was rooting for lost. But, you know, I love New England, and I love the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. See, I like it so much I even knew to not say state and changed it to Commonwealth. But, oh God, I'm so tired of the Patriots. But they were like a machine. And then, you know, the L.A. Rams, well, okay, sure. But I got a soft spot in my heart for the Saints because of all the years that they were the Aints. And growing up in the South, well, there were a lot of years of just watching them lose and lose and lose and lose. Dadgummit, that was a really terrible no call, is what that was. Just a horrible no call. Anyway, though, I got me a nice steaming hot cup of decaf, courtesy of Agnes. And I usually don't drink coffee during the program, but this is, well, at 56 degrees and it, right, yeah.
And it's because I made you red eye gravy.
And yeah, oh, that's the other thing. She made me red eye gravy and biscuits for dinner. And that is, well, that's just love, hillbilly style is what that is. Oh my God, so good, so good. So where are we? Well, we are 10 days from the end of the month of January, and we are theoretically 4 days from fundraising free radio. If we can finish our fundraising by this Thursday, we will be done for the month. There are no month-ending challenges or anything on the table for the month or the year or anything. We've got a brand new year started here. But nonetheless, and we ended the week with a whopping deficit. So the fundraising goal this evening is $568. Ouch. Yeah, that really, really stings. But that's where we find ourselves, 568. And then we've got to do Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then we're done, which is really, really cool, if we can make it. And to be quite honest, we are at that time, you know, all year long, I think about this time of year, and by the time we've gotten to, like, November, I'm thinking, you know, it's a real pain in the ass when the cold stuff really comes along. But we get through, and then the cold stuff really comes along, and I remember how ill-prepared we are for it. And the propane has been successfully changed out. Thank you, Agnes.
You're welcome, Bob.
My darling.
Tell everybody I said hi and I send love.
Well, I think you just did. She said, tell everybody I said hi and I send love. And she does. She really, really means that. This is that brutal season. We got down to zero last night. And, whew! I mean, you know, seeing the breath in the bedroom and all. It's like I said, down below 20, and it's like not having walls. But we're going through kerosene, going through propane, pretty hard right now. As much as I didn't want to, I had to actually get a few of the throwaway bottles simply because it takes more than one bottle to get through a program now. But anyway, we've got We've got $568 to raise this evening, and taken all together, the fundraising goal to finish the month is $1,168. It would be only $800 except for the fact that we've got $368 out there left over from last week. But we'll figure out a way. Start with a couple of notes for this Moran Monday before we get into the thick of things. Note coming from Paul from Parts Unknown. I spent yesterday afternoon at a football party hosted by some very nice people that I was meeting for the first time. I knew that the husband is a government worker that was currently working with no pay. I didn't plan to talk politics or about the shutdown. I wanted them to enjoy the day and not bring up a tough topic. However, a few drinks in and the wife began talking about how tough it was with both of them working and only one bringing in a paycheck. Bills were getting tight and they were paying for the basics, but their fridge broke down and they can't afford to have a technician come out to take a look at it or buy a new one. So they're using the freezer out in the garage, as well as a lot of pantry meals. I know a little bit about that. The most shocking thing I learned about their experience is that their biggest concern was if the shutdown continues into mid to late February. Essential non-paid workers cannot take vacation or sick time while not being paid. They have to show up, which means all those TSA workers who are calling in sick are risking their jobs. Their family vacation is next month, planned months in advance, hotel reserved, transportation paid for, and tickets booked. However, if the shutdown is still going on, the husband still must go to work on his time off that was already approved before the shutdown. They may have to cancel the trip, which is something their children are really looking forward to. So not only do you have to suffer the indignity of not getting paid, you have to cancel a family trip because you have to continue to work with no pay or risk getting fired. This is when the husband jumped into the conversation and said that a couple of his co-workers already had to cancel their vacations that were scheduled in January. That got as much of a refund as they could on the plane tickets and other deposits, a little bittersweet, no vacation, but some extra money to pay bills. Morale, Paul tells us, is low amongst federal employees. I don't know how much longer this can go on before something awful happens on a grand scale. Also, quick question about Senate rules. How much power does the majority leader of the Senate have over keeping legislation from being voted on? How many senators have to support a motion to bring legislation to the floor to override Senator McConnell? Is it like the filibuster? Do we need 60? Is it two-thirds? How does it work? I don't know the complete rule scheme, but I know that in many instances, bills are brought to the floor by what's called unanimous consent, Paul. And unanimous means exactly what it says, unanimous consent. Everybody says, yep, let's go on, let's deal with this. And the problem with unanimous consent is that one vote is enough to derail it. For instance, Tim Kaine from Virginia last week tried to bring a bill to the floor that would have reopened certain portions of the government. And when he said, Mr. President, speaking not to the President of the United States, but to the President pro tem of the Senate, Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent to bring to the floor Senate bill number blah, 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 for consideration. And Chinless Mitch just sat back there. And by the way, if you want a bit of an explanation of why Chinless Mitch is how Chinless Mitch is, you want to get Dr. Bill's podcast from earlier this afternoon. He does what he does so well, and that is to calmly and patiently lay out the facts. Just the facts, ma'am. Gets all Joe Friday on us. And when he's done, you realize just how compromised our government is. I didn't want to interrupt him, but at the same time, I wanted to ask him, hey, Bill, there was some self-dealing. There was wealth in the early Congresses after the framers put together the Constitution. Was it like this then? Did they anticipate that somebody some multi-millionaire who married into foreign money would just completely screw the United States for his own political ends. But I didn't, and he continued, and it's probably better that I didn't interrupt. But you want to, you might want to take Dr. Bill's podcast. You can find it over at podbean.com on my account, Bob Kincaid. And you can also get it, of course, over at White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, and then click on Dr. Bill. And maybe subscribe to his podcast, and the RSS feed will put a brand new Dr. Bill in every time, or give you a notice of it every time there's one that goes up. But I mention all that by saying that the majority leader has the power to stop pretty much anything he wants to stop. And that the only way to stop a majority leader is for him not to be the leader of the majority, which he's going to be for another couple of years. Almost exactly another couple of years, until such time as we turn turn these traitorous bastards out. And I don't, look, I don't throw around the word traitor or treason with ease. But there is entirely too much evidence out there of the complicity and compromise of people like Mitch McConnell or Precious Lindsey it's okay to use it now. Because that is the nature of their behavior. They are literally harming American citizens by their political insistence on doing the bid of a Russian asset sitting in the White House. History will not reflect well on them unless this country goes so far down the drains that they get to just rewrite history in toto. By the way, before I go on, I hope you have had a happy and contemplative Martin Luther King Jr. Day. In a white place like West Virginia, it's always fun on this day to wish people a happy MLK Day. I happened to be out in Kroger's earlier today because, among other things, I had to go out and get kerosene, propane, that kind of thing. Bathroom paper, paper towels, necessities. And on the way out, I looked at our checkout clerk and I said, "Happy MLK Day." And there was about a two count. And he had to say, "Oh, yeah, thanks. Happy MLK Day." And I said, "The dream lives on." And I got that cow looking at a new gate face again. But it's good to wish folks that. And I was trying to come up with a good line, season's greetings, whatever. And so that's what I came up with. The dream is still alive. Happy MLK Day. The dream is still alive. But it'll get you some looks in a place this white. What? Mm-hmm. So I don't think I completely answered Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge, or not challenge, question. that's at least a partial answer. Things don't come out of committee without the consent of the majority. Things don't come to the floor without the consent of the majority leader. I would assume that there's something similar to the privileged resolution that you can have over in the House that can immediately send something for a vote. But I do not know this for certain fact. Let's go back then, and let me make something clear. I'm not just out here looking around for things to make people feel bad over. But ever since I realized it, when we first started talking about this months ago, and the millionaire talking heads on the TV said things like, "Well, Bill, you know, this would be a partial, it would only be a partial shutdown of the federal government. The rest of the federal government is funded through September 30th. There was some part of my brain that went, "Oh, no." Because if you operate on the theory, and I can't see where there is a reason not to operate on this theory. If you operate on the theory that Donald J. Trump is an active asset of a foreign hostile power, to wit, Mother Russia, then this partial shutdown ain't enough. He's got to stretch it out until September the 30th and then make it all come down. That, I suspect, is the real goal. And the degree to which it's going to get ugly and painful is shocking indeed. If this shutdown is not ended by, I think, January the 29th, then retirees of the Coast Guard, not active duty, people who retired, people who have paid into pensions, people who traded their earnings in real time for security when they were no longer working. I mean, it is deferred compensation is what pensions are. Well, come the end of January, if this impasse has not been stopped, then pensioners of the Coast Guard will get stiffed. The United States government will renege on its obligation to people who are living on fixed incomes. And what with this being the 21st day of January 2019, I cannot begin to fathom the stress and the horror that those retirees are dealing with right now in real time. But I think we have to at least give some consideration to the idea that the goal here is the wholesale crippling of the federal government. And if you do, as I have, and believe you me, when you're done, you feel like you need to shower in bleach. If you go over and look around in the spidery, snake, viper-infested corners of the interweb tubes wherein crawl and slither the members of the Republican maggot conservative right, you will find that they are cheering. They're clapping. They're happy. Because the fact that somehow or another the lights are staying on and they can still pump gas and they can still go to that website that rhymes with light and fart because the internet web tubes are still on. Well, that tells them that their theories that gross over enlargement of government is correct. And so they say things like, "Hang tight, Mr. President. We're going to get a small conservative government out in this." Because them federal workers wasn't needed in the first place. The heart and soul of all conservatism is, at the end of the day, cheap and, if they get their druthers, free labor. And so to them, this is just proof that all their theories about small government was absolutely correct. And that's probably where Julius Geiser, the active Russian asset in the White House, comes by this mad notion that there are government workers out there saying, "You just stick to your guns, Mr. President. We'll just suffer for you because we love you, Mr. Trump." Mm-hmm. It's where we are. But I think there is a significant risk that this will go on through the rest of this year. Stephen Miller, for instance, his power, his racist, bigoted, xenophobic power is in the ascendant. Because so many other people have fallen away and nobody will take the jobs. Mick Mulvaney, small government conservative, his power is in the ascendant. I had a note from Steve from New York. Subject line, ominous news. I think I may have told you this. I spoke to a friend of mine who is furloughed. He said he's okay through mid-March. After that, in his words, he's fucked. Bob, he and I agreed on two things. One, the only way that it will end is if the House and Senate pass a bill, he vetoes it, and they override. That will never happen. Two, the shutdown will last 6 months at least. Bob, we are quickly approaching a riots in the streets condition. Well, whether we are approaching that or not, Steve, is entirely dependent upon the people whose ox is being at present gored. I would like to think, and bear in mind, given that the people in the Congress are poll-driven, they pay attention to these sorts of things. As Julius Geiser's numbers decline, it's entirely possible that some Republicans will begin to change their mind. Now, of course, I'm cipher and challenged. So maybe somebody in the ad hoc horn research department can work this out. What is 2/3 of the membership of the House of Representatives? We know it's 67 in the Senate. That's easy, because it's just 2/3 of 100. 66, I guess, technically. But 33 1/3 times 3 is 100, so that's 66 2/3. So I view that as being 67. So you'd have to have every Democrat, even Joe Manchin, and you'd have to have a few courageous Republicans, about, 20, 21? In order to override a presidential veto in the Senate, it then becomes a question of figuring out how many Republicans you need in the House. Now, bear in mind, Mitch McConnell knows, and Kevin McCarthy knows, and I suspect even the chlamydia Claudius knows. That if House and Senate override a veto, his presidency, impeachment or no, is done, because he will have finally shown himself to be the paper tiger that he is. But before you can ever get to that, I mean, the House has passed bill after bill after bill after bill, and we're only 21 days into a two-year Congress. Bill after bill after bill after bill to reopen the government. Chinless Mitch wants nothing to do with letting any bill through, because again, he knows that if his caucus rebels against him, that is a significant blow to his power, and that if there is an override, whatever authority Donald Trump enjoyed is kaput. Let's see. What's that? We've got Darlene and Steve confirming that 2/3 of the House is 290 votes. 435 divided by 3 multiplied by 2. So 290. And so now subtract the Democratic majority from that 290, and you know exactly what it will take, how many Republicans you'll have to change to get to that override. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Steve. Randy and PA disagreeing, saying 291. I know, Steve also, partial government shutdown, Steve in New York. Ever heard of a partial eviction? Partial foreclosure? How about a partial bout of the flu? Partially homeless, partially hungry, partially suicidal. Here's another ominous thing. We don't make interest payments to creditors of the public debt. We default. Then, Katie bar the door for the global economy. We've said many times before, we are seeing apocalyptic results of this. In the chat room, Otto DeShot says Mitch has got to cave. Mitch hasn't got to do anything Mitch does not want to do. He holds power and does so absolutely unaccountably. Ah, well said, Sister Carol Baker. How many Republicans you have to change? Republicans don't change. They just sit back and blame the Democrats. And the point being that vote might, for lack of a better word, change if Julius Geezer's numbers continue to fall. Now, from the Department of Redundant Paranoia Department, here's the thing to worry about. some massive national disaster. Not a national emergency like wanting a fence, but a real live national disaster, something on the order. And you know, not a hurricane, not a hurricane, not a forest fire, not a series or a cluster of tornadoes. Although, thanks to climate change, what used to not be tornado season now is. That used to didn't really get going down in the southeast until Marchish. Now it's possible to have them in January and February. But that won't, no, I'm talking about a man-made cataclysm of some sort, and I'm sure in the sick, twisted, spirochete, slithering settlings between his ears that otherwise pass for brains, Julius Geezer would love nothing more than a massive terrorist attack of some sort. And then he would show up at the podium saying, you know, I told you we needed a wall, but the Democrats wouldn't give me a wall. And now we have, fill in the blank of whatever disaster it is. And so I'm declaring a national emergency, yada, 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 yada. But that doesn't even get the government reopened. Because by then he will have upped the ante. And see, that's one of the fundamental problems with this shutdown. He said, send me a bill and I will sign it. And as much as I despise Chinless Mitch, let him have the bill. And that's when Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, my servant here is a cigar box full of money. Bring me back another cigar box full of those yummy pills that I love to chew up for the refreshing burst of flavor. Flush Flimball and Anthrax Coulter threw hissies, and suddenly he wasn't willing to sign the bill anymore. That's how we got here. I know it's hard to conceive of that, but that is how we got here. It sounds like madness because it is. Subject line, little ray of sunshine. Megan says, call me a blind optimist, Bob, but I think riot-level conditions would unleash forces the GOP doesn't want. You always said people would only get out in the streets when the cable was turned off. Well, we fed workers in bread lines. The problem with the GOP is their tenuous grasp of both reality and history. This has happened before, where the rich got greedy and the poor died as a result. The end result wasn't good for the rich. Oh, I don't know. Tell me, and I'm not being mean here, but tell me, Megan, about all the times that the poor got fed up and started chopping the filthy rich into little tiny pieces and throwing them in the harbor. Yeah, me neither. The 1929 stereotype of Wall Street types leaping from the windowsills. Jump, you fuckers. That was far more an image than it was a reality. And if anybody did jump, they were not the people that really held the reins of power. So, you know, just bear all of this in mind. Note coming in from Monique. More proof, Paul Ryan was a moron's was a moron. Wasn't this his wet dream? Isn't this Ayn Rand crap? Well, it sort of is, Monique, but it won't be truly Ayn Rand crap until October the 1st, 2019. Then we're into Ayn Rand territory, because that's when the whole blessed thing shuts down, goes to ground, done. And don't think for a minute that an asset, an active asset of a foreign government, a hostile foreign government, would hesitate to do that. Meanwhile, as to the MLK Day observations, Tangerine Tiberius showed up at the MLK Memorial in D.C. for literally 2 minutes. And then, whoop, gone. Monique says Trump and Pence should have stayed their behinds home. Too bad a gust of wind didn't blow that thing on Dumpster's head as he stood in front of Dr. King desecrating his memorial. Well, nothing good ever comes of Donald Trump pretending to give a damn about anybody who isn't Donald Trump. Steve in New York says, this is Naomi Klein's disaster capitalism. Well, yeah, it kind of is, isn't it? But I think it transcends that, Steve. Because Naomi Klein's disaster capitalism doesn't have a component of having an active asset of a hostile foreign power at the levers of government. Oh, and by the way, in case you missed it, well, all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it. By all means, let me bring your attention to the fact that Mike Pencilneck Geek, actually, really, no kidding, this is not a joke, I ain't funnin', compared Donald Trump to Martin Luther King. And if that wouldn't make a freight train take a dirt road, I don't know what would. But yeah, this was the day when white Republicans, the white wing, remembers one thing that Dr. King said and not a damn thing other. I believe you should judge a man on the content of his character and not the color of his skin. And white wing America sees that as another way of saying it's okay to discriminate against people for being black. All you got to do is say they ain't as smart as us white folks. That's what Republicans get out of that. I'm not kidding. And another couple, as I've said, and I say this every year, give it a couple of 100 more years, and the real activist, angry, determined Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. will be as inaccessible to the common herd as is the real, actual, no kidding, Saint Nicholas. It is the ongoing Santa Clausization of Dr. King. And because history is a real thing, well, before we do that, let's get the hockey puck out and get this out of the way. Because it's colder than hell outside. It will still send you out the door tearing at your clothing. eating dirt and running rabbits from Meet the Face the Prestitutes. We have the following. No, Face the Nation.
Looked at Speaker Pelosi and said, okay, if I gave you everything you wanted, if I signed legislation for most funding most of the government and had a 30-day extension on Homeland Security, he said to her, I was sitting there, he said, would you give me funding to secure the border and a wall? And she said no. So what the president directed us to do, our
Now, time the hell out. At no point in time has Nancy Pelosi said there would be no money for border security. This secure the border bullshit is just, and by the way, if unless I'm mistaken, this is actually the anniversary of the death of George Orwell. It's just more Orwellian language. He wants a wall, a barrier, steel slats. The Congress has been giving him, and the Democrats have been acceding in giving him, border security money for 2 years. Remember, last year there was $1.6 billion that he didn't even fucking touch. So it's not border security and a wall, it's a wall.
Negotiation team was to reach out with rank and file Democrats in the House and in the Senate. And what the president presented yesterday really is an effort to bring together ideas from both political parties. I think it is an act of statesmanship on the president's part to say, here is what I'm for. It includes my priorities. It includes priorities that Democrats have advanced.
I apologize if you happen to have a mouthful of coffee or soda or beer or water when he made the reference to Donald Trump being a statesman and you just spit-taked all over your monitor. That's on me. I'm so terribly sorry, because that's a real Lulu.
For some period of time, and we believe it provides a framework for ending this impasse, securing our border and reopening government.
I didn't hear you say which Democrats are supporting it, though.
Right.
Well, need that.
Well, the president met this week, we all did, with the Problem Solvers Caucus. I think we all know.
Otherwise known as the Neo-Maxi Zoom Dweeby Caucus, the not really Democrats, right.
Who was there, and we were grateful for their presence. But we've had good conversations with Democrat members of the Senate. But look, their leadership has discouraged them in the House and the Senate from engaging the administration, so I want to respect those conversations. But I think what the American people saw the president do yesterday was say, I want to set the table.
Now, granted, this is a radio program, so you're going to have to trust me on when I tell you about his body language. He is leaning away from his interrogator when he says these things. That, in gambling parlance, is a tell. He's lying.
For us resolving this issue in a way that achieves his objectives to secure the border, end the humanitarian security crisis, end the government shutdown, but also to bring together the Democrats' priorities to accomplish that. That's what the American people expect us to do. And honestly, the hearts and minds of the American people today are thinking a lot about it being the weekend where we remember the life and work of the Reverend.
Okay, so get the hockey puck, really? I mean, strap this one in hard, because you're gonna be shrieking like a damn banshee. Yeah, Monique, by the way, says, I want to see Pence indicted before Trump. Let's see the GOP terror then. Mother!
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., one of my favorite quotes from Dr. King was, now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. You think of how he changed America. He inspired us to change through the legislative process to become a more perfect union. That's exactly what President Trump is calling on the Congress to do. Come to the table in a spirit of good faith. we'll secure our border, we'll reopen the government, and we'll move our nation forward, as the president said yesterday, to even a broader discussion about immigration reform in the months ahead.
Lies, 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 lies. And if he actually knew that quote from Dr. King, I am the galactic overlord of the amorphous, multi-limbed people of Norblap 9. I do happen to have, however, some handy quotes from Dr. King. That might be a shock to the, and I don't know. I don't know if we've got any little white wing lurkers anymore. I don't really care. In 1966, he told Mike Wallace, "I contend that the cry of black power is at bottom a reaction to the reluctance of white power to make the kind of changes necessary to make justice a reality for the Negro. I think that we've got to see that that a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the economic plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years." Yeah, you're not going to hear Mike Pencil Neck Geek quoting that anytime soon. And to prove the transcendence of his words, I'm going to alter them just a little bit. Let's see what happens. "I contend that the cry of Black Lives Matter is at bottom a reaction to the reluctance of white power to make the kind of changes necessary to make justice a reality for black lives." Still works, doesn't it? How about this? "When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered." Hi, Google! Yeah. Hi, Twitter! Hi, Jeffy Zuckerberg and Facebook. Howdy. Or, and again, no. Mike Pencilneck Geek would run screaming into the night if these words ever left his mouth. "Again, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant ethic of hard work and sacrifice. The fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves and continues to thrive on the exploitation of the poor, both black and white, both here and abroad." And there's not even an argument to be had about the truth of that statement. It is absolutely, undeniably, unquestionably not true, but factual. There's nothing in there to believe except the thing that Dr. King identifies. We have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant ethic of hard work and sacrifice. It is entirely mythological. Because you see, as long as some portion of the machine is oiled with the blood and sweat of stolen labor, then the entirety of that machine is tainted by that blood and sweat of stolen labor. Remember, capitalism was invented, or at least identified, by Adam Smith in 1776. It would be a good while before Britain would outlaw slavery, and an even longer time before what would become the United States would do the same after a great and bloody paroxysm of death and destruction. Or this. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. That's the Beyond Vietnam speech in 1967, and if we were approaching spiritual death in 1967, then we are probably spiritually pushing up daisies and have been since at least the ascension of Ronald Reagan in 1980. And then this. Where do we go from here? 1967. Whites, it must frankly be said, and my God, if this was true in 1967, it's true times a gajillion now. Whites, it must frankly be said, are not putting in a similar mass effort to re-educate themselves out of their racial ignorance. It is an aspect of their sense of superiority that the white people of America believe they have so little to learn. The reality of substantial investment to assist Negroes into the 20th century, adjusting to Negro neighbors, and genuine school integration is still a nightmare for all too many white Americans. These are the deepest causes for contemporary abrasions between the races. Loose and easy language about equality. I mean, I'm going to go back and start that sentence again. Loose and easy language about equality, resonant resolutions about brotherhood, fall pleasantly on the ear, but for the Negro there is a credibility gap he cannot overlook. He remembers that with each modest advance, the white population promptly raises the argument that the Negro has come far enough. Each step forward accents an ever-present tendency to backlash. Again, 1967. And it seems like it just gets more true day by day. As I watch the two conference championship games yesterday, a thought came to mind. I suddenly looked up and realized the date and the time. And I remembered where I was precisely 10 years previous. I got on a plane in Beckley on January the 20th, 2009. One bag, one backpack. In the backpack was my little portable broadcast rig. We sat on the tarmac in Beckley for more than a half hour waiting for the airspace to clear as Dim Leader made his exit from D.C. we weren't allowed to be in the air at the time. But eventually we took off, and we took about 45 minutes, and the next thing you knew, we were landing at Dulles. And it was as cold that day as it is now. And it was my first trip of that sort to D.C. So I had to sort out how to find the bus to get me to the metro. And then I had to figure out how to ride the metro. Well, I got the bus. It took me to the Roslyn station. And, you know, out-of-town hillbilly and all. I managed to get on the wrong line. And by then, the day was coming to an end. It was, 7:30, 8. And I rode around a whole bunch of the southern portion of the metro until I eventually got off and figured out which line I needed to be on. But it was a magic evening because people were coming home from the inauguration of Barack Obama. The largest crowd for any inauguration ever. And apparently that still bedevils the orange toddler, the man baby, in the White House. But gathered all around me in those crowded cars, the metro was free that day, were African-American families with, you know, little elementary school kids, all the way down to babes in arms, bundled up as it just... All you could see was their little faces sticking out of their little fleece hoods because it was cold. And I just made idle chat. What a day. What a day. And without fail, the responses came, yes, it is. Yes, it is. What a beautiful day. And it absolutely was. But I was reminded of that and how much can change in 10 years. The last two have been spent by a petty little would-be, wannabe Martinetta, little hankering tyrant who has spent 2 years trying to erase a black man from the presidency. And so when Dr. King says, where do we go from here? When he says he remembers that with each modest advance, the white population promptly raises the argument that the Negro has come far enough. And how many times... How many Republicans have there been? Well, you know, racism's over. I mean, look, Obama. But it's the front end of that excerpt that kind of grabbed me within the context of the past weekend. Whites, it must frankly be said, are not putting in a similar mass effort to re-educate themselves out of their racial ignorance. It is an aspect of their sense of superiority that the white people of America believe they have so little to learn. And if I was inclined to believe in spiritual stuff and otherworldly stuff, I would swear that Dr. King reached down and used this past weekend to show us all how much further white America has to go. And showed us that through the bodies and the shrieks and the cultural appropriation and the smirks of the entitled little white boys, the little white mean boys from Covington Catholic High School in Covington, Kentucky. Carol Baker, does this have any resonance for you?
Oh, hell yeah. It's got a ton of resonance for me. As I was informed this morning that, you know, I was one of the wrong coloreds today. The celebration wasn't for me. By a cracker, of course.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, white folks being gatekeepers of a black man's national holiday.
Of course.
Yeah, naturally.
And, of course, then we had the joys of watching the little punks this weekend in D.C. from Covington Catholic School for Privileged White Males.
And before we go into the particulars of what happened this weekend, that's some little high school they got going there.
Isn't it just?
I mean, they've got a basketball team that shows up for games with their fans wearing blackface.
Yes.
And they've got a former basketball standout who is presently, for the second time, facing rape charges.
Yes.
As I said on Facebook over the weekend, yeah, I don't know any of these kids' names. I'm just going to call them PJ and Squee and Brett.
That's pretty much it. I said, you know, after this kid's family hired a PR firm.
Yeah, now, didn't that just about beat cats fucking?
Oh, I'm telling you. And it's like, I read all the horror stories from all the people on Twitter of people who have had confrontations with these little bastards. Oh, and the headmaster at Covington Catholic is a Father Philip DeVos. Oh, he's got a Twitter feed, too. Why are women involved in feminist and anti-fem causes so dreadful looking? One suspects the attractive have better things to do.
Oh, somebody's been listening to an oxymoron on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
My friends, these feminazis are just feminists because they can't get a date. They're ugly.
Yeah, exactly. Or all the women Trump said he couldn't possibly have harassed because they were too ugly to fuck.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, among other things, this high school, well, it's not so much the high school, it's the diocese. The diocese is basically it's an overarching corporate management for a series of schools. There's another high school that's not Covington Catholic, but it's in the same diocese.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just last May. Their valedictorian, the smartest kid in the graduating class, just so happened to be, well, you know, gay. And maybe a little bit gender non-conforming.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he or she, I don't know what pronouns this person prefers, they wore a darling pair of pumps to the prom. And it set those good Kentucky Catholics into paroxysms of fear and terror and outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And so they banned this human being from delivering a valedictory address. I mean, it didn't even have any of the words in it that I'm, and God knows, I know you have used. It was perfectly acceptable language, but the valedictorian was calling on his community to not be so shitty to gay people.
Yeah.
Or the LGBTQIA community.
Mm-hmm.
They squelched that speech, and in fact, he wound up delivering it via bullhorn after commencement was over. On the other hand, Covington Catholic issued a statement saying, "Oh well, we're just figuring this out. We're just finding out about this. This is deeply disturbing." and what you mentioned earlier, I didn't know you could hire a PR firm on a Sunday, Carol.
Well, if you're a rich white family, you can, because this PR firm was hired by the family.
Son of a gun. I mean, do you just go into the Covington Yellow Pages, or?
I don't know. The kid with the Martin Scorsese smirk, it was his family who hired them.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, essentially, we're all being gaslit over this whole thing. Oh, he wasn't smirking. He was nervous. He was frightened. There was a man right in his face. There were black Muslims saying awful things to these boys. The press is distorting the narrative because of their hatred for Trump. Just because those boys were wearing MAGA hats doesn't mean they were Trump supporters. And this one's my favorite. Did you watch the full unedited 2-hour video? You can't see the truth unless you see the whole thing. And they're all designed to plant seeds of doubt in the minds of the people who saw what they saw.
The funny thing is, I did see the whole video. I threw away a significant portion of my life doing that.
Me too.
And I was familiar with those statements. You got to watch the whole thing. And it occurred to me that if this was taking place in a courtroom, and counsel said, "No, I want the jury to see the full 2 hours," if I was the judge, it's counselor approached the bench. Ixnay on owing Shay the old hey thing hey. Are you nuts? It doesn't show what you think it shows. Because, see, this was the culmination of a weekend of just shitty behavior.
Well, here's the comment that the kid made in his formal statement that kind of raised my antenna. He said, because we were being loudly attacked and taunted in public, a student in our group asked one of our teacher chaperones for permission to begin our school spirit chants to counter the hateful things that were being shouted at our group. Now, here's how we should know that what this young man is asserting is nothing more than a weak attempt at revisionist history at best and classic gaslighting at worst. I have a friend who taught high school for 10 years and took more kids to off-campus field trips and all kinds of concerts and auditions and competitions and everything. And he said to me, he said, under no circumstances, if we had been confronted while on a school sanctioned field trip by a group of protesters shouting derogatory comments at us, would we have been allowed to encourage the students in our care to respond in kind by shouting a school spirit chant back at the protesters? Because all that does is escalate a potentially dangerous situation. It's field trip 101. When bad, strange, dangerous stuff happens, get the hell out of there. And any teacher or administrator worth their salt would have hustled those kids out of there to make sure that none of the knuckleheads with no self-control in their group started doing exactly what this kid says he asked his teacher chaperones for permission to do. It always seems to come from groups of students from privileged schools, kids who were born on third base and are convinced they hit a triple.
Absolutely. Of course, I don't know if your friend ever led a busload of privileged white boys to go to Washington, D.C. to demand that constitutional rights be taken away from women to have autonomy over their own bodies.
Well, exactly. First of all, these little bastards were in Washington, D.C. To attend a rally designed to enslave women. And then they're wandering around with their MAGA hats. And then when the Native American Army veterans walked in between the two groups in an attempt to de-escalate it, that kid in the beginning was not standing in that guy's face. That man never walked up to that kid and got in his face. He never finger wagged him. He never told him to back down. He just did that ceremonial song of peace.
It's a kind of a prayer song, I'm told.
It is.
And professional speaker here. Don't try this at home. I have some specific experience with this because on a number of occasions, I just happened to be in Washington, D.C. at the time that this March for Life takes place. In fact, I was staying, we used to do, there used to be these radio rows that would take place in D.C. Over the Affordable Care Act. And it just so happened they would, the reason that we had them then is because this is a really shitty time of year to be in Washington, D.C. I mean, August is bad, January's worse. And so at any other time except when they're inaugurating the president, it's about the cheapest time to go to D.C. So we had a radio row there to talk about health care and how it went, everybody needs to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Shoot, I think it's still in the archives out there somewhere. But one on one of these trips, the hotel I was staying at, these buses started pulling, bus after bus starts pulling up at this hotel, disgorging all of these pissed off Roman Catholics with their pre-weaponized little Roman Catholic school kids. And those kids ran riot the whole time they were there. You know, they were going to march and they were going to have a rally and it talk about the precious little fetuses. But when they weren't doing that, these little hellions were running riot through Washington, through, you know, Capitol Hill, downtown Washington, D.C. And so the idea that they just came to peaceably assemble and petition for redress of grievances, oh, blow it out your cassock.
Listen, the kids from the Catholic schools are the worst. I remember when I was in high school, I was on the softball team, and you always dreaded playing the girls from Don Bosco High School. It was a Catholic high school. You dreaded it because they were nasty, foul-mouthed. I learned my best curses from those witches. And I remember, it's true. I remember sliding in to home, and the next time I got up at bat, the catcher leans in real close to me, and she goes, "You try a stunt like that again," she goes, "I'll break your fucking leg, you fat bitch."
Yeah, that's on par with some of the experiences I had at a similar age. We toured to Italy, and some kids from a high school called Weirton Madonna were with us, and one of those little heathens in the Vatican. I've told this story before. In the Vatican, he took a cigarette and crumbled out some tobacco and twisted both ends so it looked like a doob. And scrambled up on to that statue of Jesus, you know, holding his two fingers up in the air, and put his doobie between Jesus's fingers. I kid you not. And then of course there's Georgetown Prep.
Oh yes.
And these, apparently these, all, particularly these all-male institutions, for instance, before they took their Facebook page down, Carol, all references to people who were not male were simply referred to as females. Not girls, not ladies, not women. Females. And anybody who thinks there's been any sort of retreat from the medieval misogyny of the church hasn't spent any time with these schools, with their administrators, or with these kids. By the way, would it surprise you, Carol, to find out that Covington High School, Covington Catholic High School, does not have a single teacher who is anything other than wonderbred white?
Hey, listen, I got on their website and saw their whole faculty roster. I saw how white it was. And then I went back to look at it again last night. You have to have a pass key to look at the faculty roster now.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, my friend that was a teacher ended his email to me today. He said, you know, those kids were kind of like the gas pourer in chief, whose red hats those boys wore so proudly as they innocently, quote, showed their school spirit or flexed the muscles of their unearned power and privilege in the face of a respected Native American elder and Vietnam veteran who was trying to instill a sense of peace into a smoldering powder keg of racially infused anger and teenage bravado that was about to explode. Kind of like a country I know. MAGA, indeed.
There we go.
There you go.
And of course, let's deal with a couple of other little issues here, too. And that is the fact that their school spirit cheer. Did you happen to know what that was? Notice what that was?
No, I didn't.
The one kid rips off his shirt in freezing cold weather and stomps with one foot and then stomps with the other foot. They set to doing the haka. You know, the haka, the ceremonial war dance of the Maori people of New fucking Zealand.
Oh,
I mean, can't little white Roman Catholic boys from Northern Kentucky come up with their own? Well, we can't appropriate. The haka.
Precious, aren't they?
And by the way, those MAGA hats.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them may have brought them from home.
Whatever. I don't
but
care where
you
they
can,
them.
But you can buy them on the streets,
anywhere,
all over D.C.
Oh yeah.
Which leads to the question: Does President Twitler get a cut?
Surely he does.
I imagine he does, and don't call me Shirley.
They're all made in China anyway.
Sure. Did you happen to see, and I did not put it up on social media because I couldn't get a verification of it, Julie Sandman is that smirking little kid's mommy. She is apparently a vice president for relationships with Fidelity Investments.
Really?
And I don't know if this was true or not, but at one point in time, her handle on Facebook or on Twitter was at Gaucho Guacamole. Proud mother of Nick Sandman of Covington Catholic, not here to apologize or grovel. Hashtag faith, hashtag family, hashtag MAGA. And then this, and again, I don't know if this is true. After what I've been through in the past 36 hours, I only wish the pioneers had brought more blankets with smallpox. There, I said it. Crucify me.
Charming. You know, the thing is that if I had ever disrespected an adult as a child, I would have, if my father found out about it, he'd have beat me to death or as close to it as possible so that I could endure as much suffering as possible.
No consequences.
And those kids surrounded this guy. I mean, they were there to intimidate.
They could have torn him limb from limb in a second.
And he was afraid that that's exactly what they were going to do. He was afraid that if he broke the stare of that kid, that it'd be, you know how like when two dogs are getting ready to fight and the first one that drops his head is the one that gets the snot chewed out of him?
Yeah.
It's that same thing.
And this is a Marine who served in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew what he was doing. He was trying to interpose himself between the two groups.
Exactly. He was doing what you would hope a responsible adult would do. But we're all worried about those black kids that started it. Those black kids started it. And they were Muslims. They weren't Muslims.
They were Hoteps.
Yep.
And I have received a quick education in Hotepery, courtesy of Tracy.
Well, do tell.
This is an interesting movement. Mm-hmm. It is. They've been identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group.
No shock there.
I've seen them. They hang out. A group of them hang out, and by hang out I mean they show up and they set up boxes and they set up loudspeakers and stuff, and they dress in a particular fashion. God, didn't that sound white of me? Outside the Chinatown metro station in D.C. sometimes, especially in warm weather.
Uh-huh.
Oh my goodness. It's interesting. But they hold to this belief that Jews aren't the real Israelites. They are.
Really?
And so the genesis of some of what happened this weekend apparently did have to do with some of the Hoteps shouting stuff at some of these rotten ass white kids from Covington Catholic High School. And then they started shouting, because this was also the first ever Indigenous People's March. That's why the Native American group was there. This was their march. And they shouted to them, among other things, that they lost their land because they pray to totem poles.
Oh my God.
Because the Indigenous group was pointing out that everything that is Washington, D.C. had previously been Native land, and in fact there was a Native town there that was rubbed out and erased and genocided.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the need came in for the Omaha elder to feel like he had to interpose himself between the two before something got really nasty. So they got abused by the Hoteps, and then they got abused by the white Catholic boys.
Yeah, I believe that.
It's kind of, in a way, it's America. It's the American history of Indigenous America in miniature. But the fact of the matter is, 90% of this would not have happened had these privileged, spoiled white boys not been there.
True. And I give a good portion of the blame for this lies with the chaperones.
Well, yeah, but we must understand that the chaperones were there for the same impure purpose.
It's true.
As everybody else. So they were, you know, because, and how could, the whole damn bus full was weaponized from the moment they left Kentucky.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because they were going to come up here and save the precious fetuses that they have no business even talking about. And if it's anything like the times that I saw the Catholic schools show up for the March for Life,
mm-hmm.
there's a hell of a lot more men than there are women. Because I think even so-called anti-choice women know deep down that if it came right down to it and they needed to, they could go, they knew they could go somewhere and exercise their constitutional rights, you know, just not tell the hubby.
Bob, you don't know how many of these pro-life women that I personally have met face to face have all told me that they regret their abortion. And that it was only after they found Jesus that they realized what a horrible mistake it was. They always have a way, Jesus forgave them for their abortion, but the rest of us, anybody else who did it was going to hell. But they got theirs.
Yeah. And that's the ultimate hypocrisy of it, because they march around and I mean, we were actually living in D.C. one winter when they and Agnes went out and saw them, and then I went out and saw them, and then we all together took our kids out to see them, sort of like going to the zoo, because they're freaks.
Yes.
Can you the very idea that you can march around suggesting that people's constitutional rights be not modified, but absolutely taken away from them. Mm-hmm. And is it any shock to you to find out that in the last 24 hours, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda accidentally put up a graphic saying that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was dead?
I saw that today and was so unbelievably appalled.
Well, it was wish fulfillment on the part of Fox. And you can't convince me for a minute that mistake was made because Fox broadcasts to an audience of one, Carol.
Of course.
And they were trying to see if they could get a rise out of Julius Geezer. And like I said, the fact that it happens on the MLK weekend, within the grand scheme of the universe, this ain't an accident. This is the universe itself, and not, I don't go in for that, but this feels like the universe itself telling us, got work to do, got a lot of work to do. But the question, Carol, is how let's make Carol queen of America for a day. How do you go and fix a repulsive culture like exists at Covington Catholic High School?
Close the school
and send them all to public school.
Send them all to public school. Heavily integrated public schools. Let them get their ass beat. Take their privilege away. Let them all be on the same level playing ground.
And all
I keep telling myself is that, I don't know, maybe all these kids were abused by priests, and maybe that's why they're all assholes. I don't know.
Now, to be fair, that diocese has paid out a fortune in child sexual abuse claims.
That much is true.
Because, see, they also maintain feeder schools for the couple of Catholic high schools of an elementary variety. And can you imagine shelling out north of $10,000 a year to get your children to be taught to be bigots and misogynists and apparently rapists?
I have never in my life been so proud of what public school education I got. I'll tell you, they taught me to think for myself. I understood what cognitive dissonance was and confirmation bias was. I understood what facts were. I understood what things that aren't facts are. I understood integrity and honesty and free thinking and all kinds of things. I had some pretty amazing teachers.
Oh, my public school education, especially for, you know, Alabama, was astonishingly good. But I grew up in a privileged town that had a tax revenue base and maintained itself as a reasonably decent school system, even after integration, when a whole lot of school systems in places like Alabama and Mississippi just said, well, we're going to let the school system go to hell now and let the Christians open their academies. Didn't work like that where I was.
Yep.
My high school, when it opened, was actually even featured in Life magazine as the school of the future. Every student had a microscope in biology class. That sort of thing.
Yep.
And I was of the first couple of years that where kids went to school. And I mean, I never knew anything but integrated classrooms. And it didn't seem to do me any great deal of harm to my whiteness.
There weren't any black kids in our school. There weren't any Hispanic kids in our school. We were all white.
But, well, it's Iowa.
It's Iowa. Farm country. I mean, you just don't see a lot of black farmers. Now, if you went into Waterloo or Cedar Falls or Cedar Rapids or Des Moines, sure. They had integrated schools. And we competed against those kids of color in whatever we were doing. And you know what? Not once did anybody from our school ever toss a racial slur. We just didn't.
You was raised right.
We were all raised right. Now, that was when I was in elementary school. Now, when I got into high school, of course, you had all the drug dealers and the sluts and who got knocked up. And those people are all Trump supporters now because they have since found Jesus and I'm the reason we can't have nice things.
Naturally.
Which is why... I friended them all on Facebook, but put them on a restricted list where they can't see anything but my cover photo and my picture, which is never me.
No, that's true. It's not. But this is a holiday for reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help wondering... First of all, this has gotten manifestly worse over the course of the last 2.5-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
From the moment that dunderhead came down that escalator, braying and barking about Mexican rapists to the present day, it's all just been a dog whistle to tell terrified racist America that it's okay to be racist. And the fact that Stephen Miller remains he's one of the last people who is still there who had previously been there, tells us, you know, where it's going to go. I.e., it's not going to get any better.
No. And frankly, all the work that we did all those years to make it socially unacceptable for people to openly and brazenly behave this way has now been normalized. And I just feel like in two years, we have gone back 50. So what's the next two going to get us?
I think if the Republicans felt like they could get away with it, they would introduce the idea of the repeal of the 13th Amendment.
I know they would. And then they take voting rights away from women.
Sure.
Sure.
Reinstate Plessy.
Sure.
Overturn Brown v. Board of Education. Remember, Brett Kavanaugh could not be pinned down on whether or not he thought Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided.
Yeah.
And, well...
So it's a great time to be a wealthy white male. 2 out of 3, Bob. Sorry.
Well... And you know, it's the one that I'm missing that really matters.
Of course.
But I think all of this has to sort of be taken in context, Carol, with where the, you know, with where the country stands at this particular moment in time. And that is not a good place.
Because it looks an awful lot like a very, very steep precipice.
And I'm absolutely convinced that how can I put this? Well, what I was talking about at the beginning of the program, namely that I don't think the end game to this shutdown is this particular shutdown. Do not be surprised.
I don't think it's the end either.
Do not be surprised if the goal is to get to September 30th and shut the whole thing down.
Not until we do something about the Grand Wizard of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, to me, when I saw that September 30th date, because that's how long the other continuing resolution lasts, that's the time frame on getting rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi has until roughly the August recess to put enough pressure on him to make him leave.
Yes. And I don't know how to say any stronger, Bob Mueller, hurry. Hurry. We're out of time.
Hurry, Obi-Wan Mueller. You're our only hope.
It's kind of like that. That's exactly how I really feel. But, you know, I won't stop poking at snakes. And
you won't stop being an opinionated bitch.
I won't stop being an opinionated bitch. I will not stop torturing assholes on Twitter. I will not stop getting my account suspended on a regular basis.
You know, if you could stay out of Twitter jail for more than 15 minutes at a time, it might help.
I know, but I can't help it. It's so fun.
You've just got the little freaks out there. You're on a list that you couldn't stop somehow or another, and they just sit there and report you every time you breathe.
It's always Tommy Lauren. It's always Eva Braun Barbie that gets me into trouble. Her little cult of followers are the ones that love to report my account. But the one that got me the worst was I had compared, and this was like a year ago, I had compared the Trump tax scam to a cyanide pill for the elderly. Someone said that I was promoting suicide or the death of another, and I was like, Twitter, come on. No sane person can take that to mean that I'm a danger to myself or others. I literally got messages from Twitter telling me to get professional help, and they would not reinstate my Twitter account until I deleted that tweet.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not kidding. So it just depends. You can get nailed for anything.
Well, it's kind of like something, and I suspect you probably don't use it, but and I don't either, but I did read the story. I guess at one point in time, Tumblr was a home for people to express their alternative views of sexuality.
That's not my gig.
Yeah, well, right. See, apart from doing radio while naked, you know, that's about as kinky as I get.
I'm telling Agnes.
Oh, believe me, she knows. She's got the eye bleach to prove it. But you know, people would express their kinks. And, you know, pornographic, maybe. Obscene, probably not. But Tumblr went through and declared themselves to be a sexuality-free zone. Yet, on the other hand, and you're going to love this because it dovetails exactly. On the other hand, Tumblr is still filthy with what? Yeah, Nazis.
Yeah, there's the shocker.
Yeah, the shocker's gone too. No, sorry. But no, the right-wing Nazis, et cetera, all over the place on Tumblr. But by God, we're not going to have any pictures of anybody, you know, doing something weird.
Like breastfeeding, those are banned.
Yeah, because, you know, that's weird. Whereas, you know, well, Nazi's going to Nazi.
Well, you know, we've sexualized women to the point that their breasts can't be anything but fun bags for men. You know, they can't be used to feed children.
Oh, no, of course not. That's disgusting. I mean, what's in that stuff? Is it even organic?
Trust me, it is.
I will take your word for it. So you survived the second great freeze in Kansas City, I trust?
Oh yeah, it's a little chillers out there tonight. The wind's blowing at about 35 miles an hour, and thank goodness no precipitation is falling. But let's see, it says it feels like 10 out right now. It got down to 6 last night.
We got down to 2. And it's a roasty toasty 10 outside on the way to 9. And here inside the fabulous studios, we've almost made it to 60 degrees. You know, again, up 1 foot from the ceiling. Down here on the floor, it's a different story.
Hey, you're the one who wanted to take your clothes off.
No, I didn't. That's not going to happen until it warms up substantially. No. They do one of those polar bear plunges here on New Year's, and like, what? You people are sick. I mean, never mind the pornography. You want to put on a Speedo and jump in the new river on New Year's Day?
No,
you go right ahead.
No thanks. Hey, in July I was swimming in El Nacimiento in Mexico, and it's a spring fed, comes out of the high mountains, and let me tell you something, that sucker's so cold. It was like you got out of the water and you had to like get hot again before you could even think about going back in. So these stupid asses who take their clothes off and run into frozen rivers and lakes on New Year's Day are morons.
Oh yeah.
Besides that, I've had pneumonia twice this year. I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah, you're gonna take a powder on it for the good. I think that's a good call on your part. By the way, you got a big amen from Darlene in Connecticut.
About what?
She said Carol's dead on about the Catholic schools and sports. When I was in Grammar Public School, our girls' basketball team played a Catholic school in Harwinton, Connecticut. They were the nastiest, most vicious team we ever played. I got thrown to the floor by one of the girls on a grab ball after the ref called it for a jump ball. And the sweet Catholic girls all laughed. No technical called. The only satisfaction I have is that we kicked their asses. We only lost once that year in the regular season to another public school team that eventually won the championship against us. This other public school had a superior team with a deep bench, and they were never vicious. They were competitive and tough, but respectful. Many of us went on to become friends to this day once we all entered the regional public high school together. To this day, however, when I drive by that rinky-dink shit-ass Catholic school, I think of that basketball game of 40 damn years ago. Yeah, Covington Catholic is Kavanaugh's Georgetown Prep all over again.
It is. They're the worst. The Catholic schools are the worst, and especially the ones that are all male.
And lest anybody think that this is just some sort of generic Catholic bashing, it's not. Because there, you know, not all Catholics, but there is something especially toxic about that all-male or all-female, you know, gender-segregated approach to education.
Exactly.
So that's just a general, what, a general caveat to all of this. I mean, the liberation theology of Central America is a very different Roman Catholicism from the staid, stodgy, bigotry, confirming faith of Northern Kentucky. And, you know, and Covington is just across the river from Cincinnati. In fact, that's, the Cincinnati airport is on the is on the Kentucky side. But again, it's Kentucky.
Yep.
And because I'm such a little history nerd, I always remember what the Native Americans said who told the colonialists that they could have it. He said, "Oh yeah, you can have it. Good luck keeping it. It is a dark and bloody ground." And I got roots that go back into that dark and bloody ground. My great grandfather, every time I walk into Tudor's Biscuit World down here, he and the whole mine crew he worked with are hanging on the wall down there. And I always stop and say hi to him. They called him Kentucky Joe. So I have Kentucky roots, and I've got a feeling, my Kentucky roots probably run deeper than most of those rotten little kids and their rotten little parents, who, by the way, where, and that's the ultimate, where were they? Where were the chaperones? Where was the Capitol Police? Why were they at the Lincoln Memorial? I mean, the Indigenous March was scheduled. The Women's March was scheduled. Why were they there? The Lincoln Memorial is closed.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, Darlene wants us to know that she is, in fact, a recovering Catholic.
Oh, me too, sis.
And we've got a correction from Ron and Raleigh, Carol. Subject line, wait a minute. Not people, Bob. White people. If you see any black people jumping into freezing water, you just let me know.
He's right. They are all white.
Well, see, we got into this the other night because, whitewater rafting is the thing around here. And I forget who it was said, "I'm guessing you don't have a lot of black tourists." And so the other day I actually found a picture of black folks going down the river, you know, in a raft. And I sent it off to Tracy. Tracy's immediate response was fake news. Wouldn't happen. We got better sense than that.
That's funny.
So yeah. But there is so much around. We talked about Mama's job. Daddy Sandman. Which just sounds weird anyway.
Yeah.
He's some sort of exalted corporate mucky muck too, I think.
No doubt.
I guess they're just working so hard for corporate America. They don't have their time. They don't have enough time to teach their children to be respectful of their elders. Is that it?
I don't know. I just know that my father always told us that if he ever caught us uttering a racial slur or looking down on somebody, we damn well better have our hand out helping them up off the ground. Because if he heard anything different, he'd wear us out. And we knew what that meant.
It would be painful.
And it had to do with a belt.
And sitting on a pillow.
And the man was relentless. When you got him that pissed, he beat you till you pissed yourself.
Yeah, he didn't know how to stop. This is, and by the way, this is not not necessarily an endorsement of corporal punishment of children.
No, it isn't. But interestingly enough, every one of us remember it, and there isn't a one of us that we're all pacifists. None of us can hit.
Well, sometimes it has that effect.
Well, my brother learned how to get back at his kids. You know, he would tell them to do something, and they go, "Yeah, yeah, when I'm done." And the very next time, "Dad, you got to take me to basketball practice." Yeah, when I'm done. And he'd make sure that they missed it. He treated them with the same respect they treated him. And you know what? They learned that when Dad said do something, you better do it if you expected the chauffeur to be on time.
The chauffeur, yeah.
The chauffeur.
Well, Carol, you have yourself a lovely evening. Stay warm. I guess I'm going to get what you're getting. We get a brief respite tomorrow. Our low's 31 for the next couple of days, and then we go back down to 18. And, well, the night before my birthday, we're going to have a low of 9, so yay me.
We're going to have one really warm day. It's supposed to rain tomorrow. It's going to get that warm, and then it's going to get bitterly cold again.
Oh, that must be our Wednesday, because we've got rain in the forecast Wednesday, and everything goes west to east.
Good luck to you, buddy.
Yeah, high of 51, low of 31. By the way, Todd in South Carolina, Stan, Carol is absolutely right about the chaperones being wrong. If the instructor sees any type of questionable crowd or confrontation, you go the other way. Your first responsibility is to the safety of the students.
Yep. And I believe he absolutely put them in a situation where they're deserving of everything that they get right now. But the gaslighting bullshit, you know what? I believe my lion eyes. I saw what I saw.
So are you, you're not hopeful that there's actually going to be any learning comes out of this, are you? That's what I thought.
Oh, learning. You're the funny one. I forgot.
Yeah, well, we try to inject a little humor into this program from time to time. Sometimes we succeed and sometimes we fail. This one feels like a fail.
Black humor is still humor.
That's true. Carol, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
You too, amigo.
Hey, and by the way, say hi to Barbie sometime for me, would you?
I will. She and I are going to go to Reno in July and meet our new cousin.
That's going to be so fun.
We're having a little family reunion. My uncle is retiring, so he won't be traveling back and forth to China. And he's coming from California, and we're coming from parts unknown, and Larry and his family are coming from Laramie, Wyoming, and he's gonna meet the wolf pack.
Oh dear God! Poor, all at once, that's a little cold.
I warned him.
Well, just it's like jumping in the New River on New Year's Day. Just full immersion and get it over with.
I'm gonna put him in bubble wrap and then march him in.
Sounds like a good idea, and take a little bit extra with you, and go run your system on the gambling machines.
God, I win every damn time. I'm going. Mama liked the slots.
Yeah. Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
Yes, she does. All right, buddy.
Take care, Carol. See you now.
Hi to the whole Horn family. I miss you guys.
Oh, we miss you. It's been so nice talking to you these last over the last week or so. You've been missed.
I got my voice back. It helps.
That goes a long way.
Yes, it does. All right.
See you. Take care, buddy. Bye now. The one and only, the irrepressible Carol Baker, live from not that far from Hooterville. Note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Aren't the maggots always first to screech about using the churns for political ends? Didn't the maggots lose what little was left of their ever-loving minds when high school children took part in the March for Our Lives? Why is it all of a sudden okay to bring these little high school maggots out to D.C. to counter-protest against a humanitarian cause? Well, it's different because they're right, Asa. It's okay for children to come out when they're right. It's okay to bring children out to argue against a woman's right to autonomy over her own body. It's not okay to have children come out and say, please don't murder us while we're trying to learn trig. There's a big, 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 big difference there. Both the lines are open if you want to jump in for some conversation. The numbers, of course, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, or 304-574-8178, get you in, as does Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, yeah, we're two-thirds of the way through the program, no time checks. Two-thirds of the way through the program, we had $568 to raise this evening. We're at zero. And we've got $1,168 to finish the month of January. And hopefully we will do that. It would be kind of cool by the time we come around to Friday on the Front Porch to have a fundraising-free Friday on the Front Porch, a Friday on the Front Porch that does not require a community-made miracle. Wouldn't it? Let's see here. Rolling through the... Had a bunch of emails roll in over the course of the conversation with Carol. And I thought I might share one or more of them. Going back to the discussion about Dr. King, Todd in South Carolina had a telling observation. Can we conclude that the Reverend King, Dr. King, may not have succeeded in this quest? It appears that an argument could be made that he did not. Thank you for pointing out the hackneyed content of my character type of rhetoric. Maybe Dr. King was assassinated for his push to unify poor people regardless of ethnicity. Is the big chair still in Anacostia? Green line, baby. I didn't get that far that evening, Todd, but I bet you somebody knows. I don't know if you can subject Dr. King to an analysis of strictly success or failure. He called it all out and called it by name. And if you want to use the metaphor of exorcising a demon, you have to call the demon's name. And he called it repeatedly. It's 2019, and I'm reading his remarks from 1966 and 1967. And that means he remains relevant, because we can take a line like the Negro and change it with Black Lives Matter, and the meaning of the statement doesn't change. That means he was speaking timeless truths. Will there be a day when people say, gosh, it must have been horrible to live in that time? Isn't it so nice that we got over all that? You know, that Star Trek future. I used to think that it was coming maybe in my lifetime. Pretty confident now that it's not. But that does not mean we stop doing the work. And I have no doubt. You see, Dr. King was an annoyance, but he was an acceptable annoyance as long as he limited himself to rights for people of color that government and power had no intention of ever granting. He had to die, however, when he started raising the conversation to include poor whites and poor everybody's, and began to see some of these divisions not as racial ones, but as economic ones. That's when he got dangerous. He was begged, for instance. You may have read the op-ed piece, and it was powerful, in the New York Times this weekend by Michelle Alexander, the woman who wrote The New Jim Crow and changed how we look at the civic oppression that still exists and sort of runs under the radar. She wrote a a piece in commemoration of MLK Day, and the New York Times published it, in which she said, we have got to do the hard work of recognizing the necessity to speak more clearly in defense of the Palestinian people. And, oh, my goodness gracious, didn't she... There was a lot of howling went on after that. Because just as Dr. King was okay as long as he was talking, and she references this in the op-ed piece, he was acceptable as long as he was limiting it to issues of race and voting rights and civil rights. But he was begged by a number of people not to give his Vietnam speech at the Riverside Church in 1967, the Beyond Vietnam speech. Because people said, well, you know, you're going to lose a lot of allies out of that, Doc. And there was a backlash. And he knew there would be. But he said, I cannot in good conscience ignore, and the war had been going in earnest for 2 years by then, I cannot in good conscience ignore this manifest wrong. And he gave the Beyond Vietnam speech, and a year to the day later, he lay dead on the walkway of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah. Hey, let's go over and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Hutt, how are you?
I'm okay. How about you? You're warmer than I am, I'll bet you.
Let's see. What temperature is it right now? So I can really piss you off. It's 60 degrees. Which for me is cold, but
You're freezing.
You're listening to me going, "Really? Really? Seriously? 60 degrees?" And you're complaining? Cuz it's so today's my airport day. And I just dropped off over in Beverly Woods, which is a serious Jewish encampment in L.A., West L.A. It's between Beverly Hills and West L.A. And it's relatively close to my house. And I called Jan and said, you know, where I was. And she's like, so that means you're coming home, right? And I'm like, well, no, I'm going to go back to the airport. And she's like, no, it's getting, because the sun's going down, it's getting cold, and you're still kind of sick, so bring your ass home. And I heard Carol saying that she's had pneumonia twice, and I'm like, see, she has to show off, you know? She can't just have pneumonia once.
Yeah,
I had
just,
pneumonia.
Well, look, you know, don't try to keep up. You can't keep up with Carol Baker, Tracy, okay?
Right. And so now,
you don't get to go out and get pneumonia a second time.
No, I'm good. As a matter of fact, I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow to, because that's one of the things that the doctor that did the house call told me, that within the 10 days of getting starting to feel better or what have you, to follow up with my doctor. Excuse me. So I have an appointment with him tomorrow. So because I'm rat tired of this cough and the shortness of breath and all of that. So I'm good. I'm going to let Carol Baker go ahead and have that second time of pneumonia, because, you know, the first time really fucked me up bad. So I'm good. I really don't need to go through this again. You know, I'm happy to relinquish the crown. You know, she could be the grand poobah champion of pneumonia. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and let her have it. I'm like, you know, I'm good, because this was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. So, yeah. So I was listening, you know, because, of course, you guys talked about the little bastards and, you know, that were there for the, you know, the March for Life.
Yeah, we've kind of given up on that whole Christian charity thing. We're just right down to the little bastards, aren't we?
Yeah, I fuck a Christian charity, and I'm a Christian. Okay, so you know what? I'm tired of the shit that people do in the name of God, in the name of Jesus, because I'm like, you know, not the Jesus that I follow. No, I'm cool, and it's amazing how you talked about, you know, Michelle Alexander, who I think is just, you know, another Michelle that I thought of, Michelle Alexander and Michelle Obama, you know, two of my favorite Michelles. And it, you know, doesn't help hurt that my middle name is Michelle as well. So it's like, you know, but, you know, I'm going to look for that, the op-ed article, because just on Friday, we were talking about Dr. Barber's speech, his keynote speech that he did directly about, you know, what we need to do about what's happening in Palestine. And then Michelle, you know, Alexander does the op-ed thing on Palestine as well. And I know she caught particular hell.
Oh, yes, she did. Reverend Barber had to jump in and get her back.
You know, I know how you feel about religion, Bob, but I got to say, you know, Reverend Barber, Dr. Reverend Barber, let me get that right. You know, let's not leave off any of his titles. He is amazing. So what did he say? Because you said he had her back.
Yeah, he jumped in and retweeted and said that basically that she was spot on. On the other hand, the ADL said something like, "We have a great deal of respect for Ms. Alexander and all of her work, but she is sadly mistaken, and there are some serious inaccuracies and untruths in her piece."
Yeah, right.
I read that, and I read that pretty closely after having seen that tweet, and I couldn't find them.
Right, you're like, okay, let me go see these inaccuracies and blah, blah, blah. And it is so exhausting when the people who, you know, that fake, you know, how dare she? I mean, like you said, we respect her work. How for never, she a lying bitch. That's what I just read from what you just read, what you just read out loud. That's my take on it.
Well, that was the gentle response, but
right.
But that's okay. Yeah, this link you sent me. Oh my God, Tracy.
Which one?
Iowa.
The Cardi B one.
No. Oh, Iowa.
The MLK day.
Hashtag MLKs.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
MLK. Mm-hmm.
A big old keg party.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now.
On MLK Day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But did you see, this is why I love the Roots.
Hey, thank God, thank God we are not in the Southern Hemisphere. We there would be MLK barbecues and MLK the fact that commercial, and it's surprising, but the fact that commercial America has resisted the urge to advertise MLK Day mattress sales, it remains astonishing to me.
No. We have MLK Day sales out here.
No.
Yes.
You mean, hey, come on down to Thumbfinger Dodge Chrysler Jeep Chevy for the big MLK blowout. Yeah, there's a lot going on down here, Bill. Really?
Not often, but I've heard. I'm like, wait a minute, did I just hear that right? Mm-hmm.
Come on down to the big MLK sale at Fred's Furniture. We've got pricing justice for you.
Whoa! Oh, speaking of the Iowa thing, Did you scroll down and read some of the comments?
Oh, sadly, yes. Yes, yes.
What is it? Come for the article, stay for the comments?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the one about the skeet shoot, the MLK skeet shoot.
No.
You got to scroll down a little further. There, I think it's on the second page of comments, but they were showing different, you know, parties and stuff. And not to let black folks be left out for doing stupid shit on MLK Day. There was what, I can't pull it up because I'm driving, but it was this big. N-word, blowout, gangster, it was just appalling, and it was black people, and I'm like, really? Dr. King did not march and die for this. He's stupid bastard. But like you was, you know, and I've had what you were talking about about him being assassinated. I have had, when I bring that up, yeah, both him and Malcolm were fine, as long as he was just dealing with the Negro problem. And Negro issues, you know, but especially Malcolm X.
Oh no! When Malcolm came back from the Hajj and realized that there was a whole lot of white people there,
mm-hmm.
worshiping in the same religion, and that they might not be
devils.
Right.
It's like, wait
that's
a minute.
That's when he became dangerous because he might start a movement.
He became dangerous.
We can't have any movement starting now.
We can't have any movement starting now because, you know.
But then again, wasn't Malcolm? And I confess the paucity of my education on this history. Was Malcolm not done in from inside the Nation of Islam?
Yeah, he was, and to this day. Well, Louis, one of his daughters tried to take Louis Farrakhan out because she feels that he has something to do with the assassination. Because Malcolm, he was becoming, you know, that my favorite word, problematic. And you know, speaking a different. Way of life as far as for the Nation of Islam. I mean, because remember, he was, after he made that comment about Kennedy being assassinated and all of the things, he lost a lot of his position and his power because, you know, he pissed off the Nation of Islam. And then he went, you know, he did his... what do they call it when they go to Mecca?
Oh, the Hajj.
It's the Hajj, right. So,
that is the Hajj, isn't it? I mean, the pilgrimage.
The pilgrimage, that's what it is, the pilgrimage. And so this is a whole different person. Because like you said, he went to Mecca and saw, you know.
Oh, time out. I just scrolled down to the MLK. Oh, shit. No, really? Martin Luther King Jr. Fun Shoot, Skeet Range, 12 p.m. Cost $20, mm-hmm. includes two rounds and lunch. How is this not like something the Klan does?
I mean, did they not realize that the man was shot? And you're gonna die?
Well, no. See, that's the really because. I ran across some asshole talking about how it, it was all Democrats, the Klan Democrats to oppose civil rights.
Here we go with that bullshit.
I don't have the time in my life, Tracy, to sit down and explain the political realities of, or the shifting priorities of political parties to somebody who has no interest in learning it in the first place.
In the first place. It's like...
But
you know,
the fact of the matter is, all Democrats voted against the MLK holiday. Son of a gun, you're kidding me. John McCain was a Democrat all those times when he voted against the MLK holiday? Because he did that thing.
Right. He did that shit, bitch.
And then who was the asshole? I think he actually managed to lose his job. Was it the grease man in D.C. who said kill four more and we get the week off?
Oh God, no! Wait, no. See, I don't. What? I had never heard that. Oh Christ.
Yeah, I mean, this guy lived to say inflammatory, provocative shit. He finally lost his job, I think. You remember that? Remember the year that Lauryn Hill won the Grammy?
The Grammy, all those Grammys, yeah.
Was it the miseducation of?
The miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, so he plays a little bit of that and says, "Good Lord, no wonder they drag him behind trucks." Public's airwaves. And this is the early 90s.
So he's lucky that there was no such thing as Twitter back then.
To the credit of the station, oh no, you're fired. Bye now. But I mean, that's the kind of response there is, because there are a whole lot of white people who are, my God, that poster. Martin Luther King Jr. phone
right.
Shoot. You're a horrible person for referring me to that, Tracy. I just want you to know.
Well, you know, I have.
And
to
the one, and heart. The one, and the one above it. For the bar with the "I Have a Dream" bash.
That's the one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, stop it!
Mm-hmm. It's just like I said. I got a gift, you know.
Well,
white people.
No. But I'm speaking from over in Wapipo land. And you tell me if I'm wrong. When I say in 200 years he will be unrecognizable. He will be as unrecognizable as the original Saint Nicholas is from Santa Claus.
Oh, as far as Martin Luther King is.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, what you call the Santa Clausation of Martin Luther King and Jr., because, you know, the Martin Luther King Jr. that white people love and, you know, and respect and all that is the "I Have a Dream." And that's that's when he was the noble Negro, you know. And so we have that Martin Luther King Jr. And then we get the Martin Luther King Jr., you know, within a couple of years of his assassination, realizing that, you know, nothing that he says or does will do anything to eradicate the deep-seated hatred and racism in this country. He becomes like basically like W.E. Du Bois did when he just said, "Fuck it, I'm out. I'm done with America. I can't deal with this shit anymore. I'm out. I'm going to Africa," and that's where he went. And didn't he stay there until he died?
And isn't it interesting that when Dave Chappelle felt the need to bug the hell out, didn't he go to South Africa or somewhere?
Yep, he's like, okay, I need to be around blackness. I need to go home to my roots.
Yeah,
you know, he's like I tell, you know, you and I joke a lot and about race and white people and stuff because we can. And because I trust you and you're not going to say anything stupid. But it gets to the
point.
Oh,
you should not trust me that far. I'm capable of a lot of stupid.
Intentionally stupid.
Okay.
You're not going to be vicious.
Mean-spirited and hateful? No. I save that for Republicans.
But, you know, right. But it just gets to that point that, you know, and I struggle with this on the real, that I swear to Jesus that if I had the money to get the fuck up out of this country and be gone, I would. If I had the money to, you know, you know, at least be gone for the next two or three, you know, be gone until the next presidential election to see who becomes president. And then at that point, you know, like if he was reelected, I'm like, and I'm never coming back. You know, I would take my family, me, my son, and my wife, and I would be gone, because it is so. It has to, like Carol Baker said earlier in you guys' conversation, we have worked so hard to make sure the stuff that's going on now was not done in public. I mean, you know, we had to, the white people had their safe spaces, they had their country clubs, and you know,
you mean the whole goddamn country?
Right. We, you know, they had in their weak nudge thing. They had the common, you know, decency. Well, not decency, courtesy to keep that shit under wraps. You know, you didn't have to, you know, worry about, you know, high schoolers surrounding, you know, taunting and, you know, doing this shit in public. You just, you know, you had your instances and occasions of stupid racism, but, you know, you guys, the crazy white people pretty much kept that shit under wraps. And then Barack Obama was elected president, and the white people lost their fucking mind.
I'm not, Tracy, challenging your timeline or your analysis, but I think you I think you absolutely have to factor the internet into this.
Oh yes,
because the from the minute that CompuServe and AOL come online, the first people on there were I'm pretty sure the first people on there were fucking Nazis and Klansmen. I mean, remember, I forget which company it was that put up an AI bot for chat on Twitter, and it took less than 24 hours for it to turn into a Nazi? Oh. There's something about that form of online communication that just, it lends itself, and I got no analysis for it.
Well, you can't, because see, not only was it a rise in, you know, white supremacy and Nazism and all that, let's not forget what else it brought on to a rise, you know, because pedophiles. Because see, they had a place to go that was anonymous.
Before the rise of the internet, if you wanted to be a Nazi or if you wanted to be a Klansman, you know, and you wanted to spread your materials and stuff, you kind of had to know somebody who had a Ditto machine and stand there huffing those Ditto fumes and you know, surreptitiously mm-hmm. running off 100 copies or something like that. Or go to the library and pay a dime a copy in the copy machine.
Right.
And all of that.
And you still had to be very careful to make sure nobody saw what you're doing.
Right. I happen to be alive in a place at a time just as things were changing. Timothy McVeigh is 1995, right?
Was it 95?
Yeah, think so.
No, wait. What was it? Because I was still...
I happened to live and work in a town where the head of the Nazi party in West Virginia lived. And Robert Byrd had succeeded in moving a whole bunch of FBI operations to Clarksburg, West Virginia. And this just drove the Nazis crazy, so they immediately began putting together a plot to bomb it. Which, because they're Nazis and not so intelligent, was promptly uncovered and caused a whole bunch of people in the tiny little crummy little town where I lived to begin to shit kittens with crocheted tails, because they were pretty sure the feds were going to come through their door at any moment, because if they hadn't been part of it, they were damn sure rooting for it. Mm-hmm. Guess what? they were Republicans. It was a Republican county. Yep. But with the rise of the internet, they no longer have to whisper to each other in back rooms or go out to, you know, cabins in the woods and stuff. Or they're able to just sit right there in the living room, banging away, and talking to other Nazis halfway around the globe. And so it's sort of a natural progression to the point where, and we had it on the program a few months ago, where the League of the South starts talking about how eager they are to hook up and find common cause with their philosophical and genetic brethren in Mother Russia. I mean, that's real.
It's scary.
You're damn right it's scary.
It's just, and then, you know, you got, like you said, we got the, you know, so let's add the internet in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And then in 2008, you have Barack Obama becoming president. And, you know, get
that. Oh, no, no, no. That's when the doors get flung open and the bats fly out.
Mm-hmm. You get the teabaggers. I mean, I'm sorry, the tea. I wish somebody hadn't told them what teabagging meant. You know.
I know.
But the
thing is, the teabaggers, and this was statistic, you know, factually verified. The teabaggers were just John Birchers, and Klansmen, and neo Nazis, repackaged and repurposed, and with different poorly spelled signs. But they are the philosophical and genetic descendants of the people who had to stand around huffing the ditto fumes a generation before, once they'd been driven underground. I mean, the simple fact of the passage of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act did a lot of damage. Because the Civil Rights Act, in particular, meant that you could go in and use the long arm of the law to do significant financial damage to these organizations.
Yes.
To the point that the Klan was driven out of business. Operation Rescue, that Randall Terry bunch, were driven out of business by lawsuits. Because once you have the mechanism of a judicial system on your side, not on your side, but just available to you,
You can
make a lot of difference, which is why, for instance, the primary job of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was to dismantle all of those civil rights protections. And the Department of Justice is a very different place than it was when Barack Obama was in. And the other day during the William Barr hearings, when Lindsey Graham said, well, elections have consequences, what he was saying is, it's okay if Trump wants to put a bunch of racists into the DOJ. I mean, you got people running the Civil Rights Division who don't even believe in the concept of the enforcement of civil rights laws.
Right. It is so painful. And like I said, I promise you this, Bob. If tomorrow I won the lottery and I won, you know, ridiculous amount of money, $200 million or whatever, I would be calling in from wherever, but it wouldn't be here. I would pack up my shit and I would be gone.
And then the question becomes, to where? Because
And here's that's the problem, because where would I mean, at some point I was like, oh, France, no, can't go there. You know, and I don't particularly want to move to an island.
Unless it's New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Okay, because there's a New Zealand story out there just for your consideration.
Oh, really?
Yeah, New Zealand, apparently some people from England, and I'll bet you our buddy Robert in Australia has seen this story. New Zealanders are fairly laid back, but they're also kind of deadly in earnest about having a nice country. And some...
Ooh, what happened?
Some people from Mother England have literally a family of, like, I don't know, 7, 10, 12, you know, it's a group, have been rampaging across New Zealand. And the whole country has been caught up in watching these heathens. Because they're, you know, they're walking down the beach and, like, you know, dropping their sandwich wrappers on the... And New Zealanders do not like litter. You know, they didn't get to be the place that Peter Jackson went to do the setting for The Lord of the Rings because people just dropped their sandwich wrappers on up on, you know, Mount Doom. And, I mean, they've been hailed into court. Obnoxious. You'd swear this kid must have gone to Covington Catholic or something. There's one little obnoxious kid who's turning around and flipping people off. They deliberately left a soiled baby diaper in a dirty onesie somewhere, and the whole country went, whoo!
See, that's when you know. Are you kidding? So this a group of, you said like 10, 12 people?
Yeah.
And they are caught, and they were causing...
And they really, and nobody really knew who they were, and somebody said, oh, I think they're Irish. And the entire nation of Ireland said, the fuck they are! They're not Irish! We're not like that on our worst day. And so you might want to consider New Zealand.
Yeah, because Bob, seriously, I mean, it's so exhausting. I mean, because, you know, at least once or twice a day, sometimes 3 days, three times in a day, I send you, well, not every day, but, you know, I send you stories. I sent you the one about the girl on the dance, the black girl on the dance team. Did I send you that one?
Oh, yeah. On the dance team. Yep. She's so black.
She's so black, and I just can't stand that.
You know, I mean, whoever said that must have been Wolf Blitzer's kin folks. So poor, so black.
You know, but it's like, oh, my God, look at her. She's just so black.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You know, her back is just so bad. And that girl is gorgeous.
Yeah, that's, she's beautiful. Stunning.
I mean, stunningly. I mean, just like when I saw her picture, I'm like, well, oh, my God. I'm like, wow. And see, that's the problem because, see, they couldn't. Because, see, she wasn't what they think a black woman is supposed to look like. You know, nappy hair, ghetto eyes, or whatever. This girl was just breathtakingly beautiful with straight hair and all this, and they didn't know what to do with her. You know, and then they was, you know, because they got pissed off because she was taken away. They said, whenever we perform, everybody's looking at her. Well, fuck you, everybody's looking at her. Because
she's the
black,
pretty
on
one.
The dance team, which means she knows how to dance. Not to say all black people know how to dance, because I can say I can't dance. I suck. That's why I got away with going to, that's why I say to people I went to white school, so people, like the white people, would think I knew what I was doing, but I really didn't. You know, so I got away with that. What?
Nothing. I didn't say anything.
So, you know, that's, well, you know, I state it because it's like, oh, look, the black girl, she knows how to dance. I'm like, no, I don't. I said, like, I could not go to a dance in my neighborhood, or, you know, because I would have been laughed off the dance floor. So it's like, no, I stay in my lane. I only dance around white people because I'm not stupid. So it's like, okay.
Are you telling me you're the Elaine of black America?
Not that bad. I can't, my problem happens when I try to dance, when I try to move and clap at the same time. So I can either do one or two, I can either clap to the rhythm or dance to the rhythm. I cannot do both. because we're going to.
What is this?
Thing in the
what
world,
is it? Wait, 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 wait. As a white man, what is this rhythm of which you speak?
The worst thing in the world for me was on Sundays when my choir sang, and we had our choir director decided that we would have to march in. I'm like, no, I have to march.
I'll break a leg before I get. I'll break an ankle halfway down the aisle.
This is why I didn't. As much as I wanted to pledge a black sorority, they do step and stuff.
Oh,
like
the
that.
Step sings. Yeah, but, yeah. You were out.
And I'm like, no. I was never on drill team.
Wouldn't they let you play the triangle or something? I mean, yeah, that's what they do. That's what they do with rhythmless white people. Yeah, here's a harmonica.
Triangle, no. Because, again, you have to march to the beat. So it's like,
oh.
No. So, yeah. like I said, I know my limits. So I would stay, away from stuff. Like I said, the worst thing in the world when I was in choir at my church was when we had to do the sway to the song, and then they would motion for us to clap and sway. And I'm like, then the worst part was I was a soprano, so that means I was on the first row.
Ooh, everybody saw you. So, see, that's like junior high school. My junior high school gym teacher, who was a heck of a basketball player and a good basketball coach, He just looked at me and said, you are beyond any skill or ability I have. They tried to teach me just something as simple as the three-man weave, where you pass the ball and dribble among three people going down the court. Hell,
okay,
I nearly died. I nearly died.
Sport.
It was terrible. Because you can't just run with the ball. No, it was a horror,
It's a horror. It's like, I'm like, not good at sports. I can sing. I can't dance. So I was kind of nerdy, but not to that extent of Star Trek nerd. Because I watched those shows, Star Trek. I went to see Star Wars, and all these other things. But I wasn't as engulfed in it to become. I can't quote shit. I can't say.
Yeah, but see what happens when you let a little black girl grow up in the valley.
Yeah. Like I said, my inner white girl comes out, and I have pumpkin chai lattes.
Shh. We swore we would never speak of this again. That's okay. Wait. That's okay. I have, and I think I may be telling tales out of school. I hope he won't hate me for it. I have an awesome, I haven't tried it, but I am told it is fan-freaking-tastic. I have an awesome chicken marinade for doing, before you fry them.
Mm.
It involves mayonnaise, Tracy.
Mm.
But it makes it so succulent and so tender. Yep.
We've had the mayonnaise discussion.
Oh, I know. I'm just,
I have admitted that I have, indulged in the mayonnaise. What are you gonna do? I don't, like you said, there's certain lunch meats and certain meats you have to have mayonnaise with, like, turkey. You don't do mustard with turkey. It's, you just don't.
No.
And a BLT isn't quite white, right? Unless you do mayonnaise with it. Again, you can't do mustard with a BLT.
Because that just sounds obscene.
It does. It does. So it's the little things, and like I said, I channeled my inner white girl over the weekend, and I watched the last three seasons of. Oh, no, five seasons, because I started at season three, four, five, six, seven, five seasons of Game of Thrones.
Don't tell me how it ends.
I get it.
One of these days I'm going to watch it.
I sat there, I finished watching the last episode last night at around 9 o'clock last night. I did that shit, and I'm like,
were you crying? Were you cheering? Don't tell me what happened, but were you just relieved?
Yeah, I was just like, I was like, wait, you know, because I was really, I was so prepared to hate Game of Thrones, you know, because when I think of Game of Thrones, I think of, you know, white kids in their mom's faces playing Dungeons and Dragons. You know, I it's just like, you know, but then again, I did watch, you know, all three movies of Lord of the Rings. So, you know, I mean, like I said, I watched Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, and all this, but there was just something about Game of Thrones. I'm like, I don't know. So a couple of years ago, I started watching it, and I started kind of liking it, but I couldn't get into a groove. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I stopped watching it because that's when I found out that the final season wouldn't be, because this was 2017. And I'm like, wait a minute. I heard that the final season wouldn't be until 2019. I'm like, well, fuck that. I'm not going to sit here and watch all, you know, seven seasons and then have to wait 2 years to see how it ends, because that only got to me. Like I said, I have the memory retentions of a special needs nut. So that meant I was going to watch the shit all over again, you know, in anticipation for the final season. So, yeah, and my son, my dear son, Alex, who, again, I do not know, you know, if I didn't know he had my DNA, and because we did a DNA test, so, and it came back that he is my child. Some of the, you know, the movies that he watches and the music that he listens to, I'm like, are you sure you didn't find your dad and just started hanging out with a lot of white people? Because where did I go wrong with you? But he watched, I mean, some of the people that he listens to, I mean, I can't even name some of these people because I'm like, who, what? You know, he listens to Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin.
Well, it ain't necessarily terrible. I mean, especially Led Zeppelin, insofar as they, you know, they made a career out of playing black folks' blues really loud.
Right. I mean, like I said, I never really listened to, but it's just funny because, you know, a lot of your music, you get some of your music and stuff, you know, are influenced by your parents. But he some of the stuff, and Jethro Tull, that's a person, right?
No, that's a band.
Okay. He listens to who? Jethro Tull. I don't know.
I love Jethro Tull. And, well, I mean, smart, beautifully arranged. I mean, living in the past, that flute. The shine went off of Jethro Tull when they decided to go and play Israel.
And
yeah,
like Chrisette Michelle when she sang at the inaugural ball or whatever.
Yeah, right. Hey Tracy, I got to roll because we've just about run out of time. But
is that late? Really? Oh yeah,
yeah
it is.
Yeah,
wow.
It's about 12 and a half. No time checks. Don't you do that to me. I'm trying to break myself.
And I gather you still haven't gone to your post office box.
No, that became impossible this weekend.
I'm never sending you anything again.
Well, don't say that. It's just weather, January.
I know.
This ain't
well, at this point, by the time you get it, when's your birthday?
A week from Thursday.
By the time you get it, it'll be a really cool birthday gift.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm down for that.
I just hope you get it before then. But you know, like you said, I don't take into consideration weather because I live in L.A. I mean, and the worst weather that we get, we had some pretty bad rains this last week. So, you know, but that's as far as we go, as far as, you know, weather. So, I don't have an appreciation for snow and shit. I don't get that. So.
No, we remember when you went up the mountain.
I got to find that video. I got to find that video because that was comedy gold.
Oh, yes, it was.
It was comedy gold. I got to see if I could find that because, yeah, that shit was awesome. Because I posted it on Facebook, didn't I? So I could probably go on my timeline and find it because... it was awesome. Well, anyway, love, I know you got to go, so Good night, farewell.
You gotta go make the toddy so we can finally make that cough go away.
You didn't send me the
I will do that. I will do that this evening, I promise.
Okay, baby. Well, anyway, you have a wonderful rest of the evening, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, take care. You take care, Tracy. Hey, happy MLK Day.
Happy MLK Day.
The dream is still alive.
the dream is still alive.
See, I think that should be the call and response. You take care, Tracy. Bye
now. Before I forget, so this has the whole Negro thing of Kamala Harris announcing her run for the presidency today. I'm like, really, bitch? Okay, I'm gone.
That's a conversation for another day.
Yes, it is.
It's a conversation that will happen.
I had to throw that in. So anyhow, we'll talk to you later.
All right, later. Bye now.
Bye.
The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver from Southern California. I'm getting a story of fantastic olives from Steve from Georgistan. Darn, those things sound good. Wowzer. It's been a little tough here at the beginning of 2019. 10 minutes to go in the program, and I got an email from Nydia. Hi, Nydia. I'm going to be down your way for the program on the Hawk's Nest Tunnel this weekend. So in honor of the thousands who perished in this country's worst industrial disaster, I'm offering this challenge to get things started. I'll kick in $50 and match another $50 by night's end if it's met. 9 minutes, $50. Can we pull that off? And then we'll only be $6.68 for tomorrow. Thank you, Nydia. And where are you going to be for the Hawk's Nest thing? Please send me an email and let me know. It might be something I'd enjoy, checking out. Thank you, Nydia, for putting the challenge on the table, the Hawk's Nest Tunnel Disaster Challenge. $50 in, another $50 to be matched if that is matched. So hopefully folks will hear that and respond. Thank you, Nydia. Thank you so very, very much. Earther is apparently still chuckling. Tracy's inner white girl. I, like, order pumpkin lattes. I sat there and watched the last seasons of Game of Thrones. The valley runs deep. Okay, I didn't realize that. It's at the park here. I'll definitely try to get there, Nydia. I'd love to meet you. I think that would be wonderful. So as we head out the door, there's one more quote from Dr. King. And by the way, was that the right thing to do, announcing your presidential candidacy on MLK Day? Thank you, Nydia. If it is not met now or by the overnight crew, we will start the program tomorrow with Nydia's challenge. Thank you, Nydia. Thank you very much. I try to be careful of what I say because of my whiteness. But that sort of rubbed me the wrong way, if I've got any business being anything. To use MLK Day as your kickoff for a presidential campaign, that's a little itchy. That's a little squirmy. Maybe we should talk about that on Titanic Tuesday. Okay, thank you. Nydia sent me the flyer. I'll have to check into it. I saved one Dr. King quote for the end of the program. Wait a minute. Note from Lady B.
Enjoying the show. I actually have the night off, so I can enjoy you and Tracy without alarming the white folks in the building. Normally, I have so much to say, but never the time to write or call you to discuss, but it seems I've gone from passion and outrage to apathy and resignation. I kind of understand that, Lady B. My mother was born in 1925. So was mine. And my father in 1935, and both in the South, being the youngest of nine children and a military brat, I missed most of the drama my older siblings went through. But, Bob, the more things change, the more things stay the same. No, I've never been denied entrance to certain stores or sprayed with a water cannon, but the harm that racism and ignorance can cause still lingers. I blame Trump and his followers for this mess. I also blame folks like my best friend, a white woman, for this shit, too. Because even though she didn't vote for Trump, in fact, she didn't vote at all, she and her husband, firmly in the middle class, believed both sides were bad. They never considered the fact that there were enough secret racists out there that hated Obama and would do whatever it took for Trump to win. That type of fucking blindness, the total obliviousness, should be enough for any deity from above to weep. There are two Americas, Bob, black and white. I will continue to live my life and love her as a friend because at the time that's all she knew. But I know now that shit ain't going to change much during my lifetime. I'm not sad about it anymore. Like I said, I just live my life. But history will not be kind to us. Our kids, grandkids, nieces, and nephews will look back in abject horror. This is us. God help us all. And I have a sense of appreciation and dare I say empathy or sympathy with that, because I can't begin to touch the reality you're describing, Lady B. But I can say that there is a sense of we are not even going to approach our potential. And the potential was so monumental, so tremendous, so powerful. And we're not gonna. You know, I saw photos of people protesting at lunch counters and all the laughing little white children, white young adults behind them were pouring food on their heads. And then I saw the pictures of those privileged, entitled, apparently very poorly raised and taught boys from Covington Catholic High School. And, you know, that high school will have one or two people of color in it, just so that they won't have to say, oh, look, it's an all-white school. But they'll stand out like a raisin in a salt shaker. And you wonder why there aren't more until you realize that the tuition is probably north of $10,000 a year. If I can offer anything, Lady B, by way of a counter-argument, those nieces and nephews that you mentioned, those grandkids, those kids, that's the reason you keep doing the work. And just because you're not marching somewhere doesn't mean you're not doing the work and you're not making change. If one opportunity presents itself to teach, whether it's correctively or whether it is to just expose one of the next generation to a history of which they are largely likely being deprived, it is work worth doing. Thank you for the note, Lady B. So like I said, I saved one quote from Dr. King. It's from the year I was born. It is from Letter from a Birmingham Jail.
I must confess, Dr. King wrote, that over the past few years, I've been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I've almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizens' counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods of direct action, who paternalistically believes he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. And in using that one word, lukewarm, of course, being a minister, he was, in using that word to a people who were probably equally familiar with Scripture, he was tapping in to a Bible verse. I would that ye were hot or cold, but ye are neither, and because ye are lukewarm, I will spit ye out of my mouth. But once again, a prophecy from 1963. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. The question is, was he right or wrong? Oh, in what he said about the white citizens' counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner. Because they are back, and they are in the ascendant. And most people choose not to think that they are. It was, in fact, easier in Dr. King's time to acknowledge the poisonous nature of the Klan because they were out there, and they were present, and they wanted to be seen. Now they show up without their hoods, and if you call them racists or say that what their little spawn did was racist or bigoted or xenophobic, well, they've got a PR firm before Sunday night is out trying to crawl, get the offenders to crawl up on the cross and pretend that they themselves are the victims. And when you cannot get a consensus in the country that water is wet, that makes for a future that is as resignatory, if that's a word, as what Lady B put forward. Hey, thanks to Ralphs, and thanks to David. We have met $35 of Nydia's $50 challenge. That's excellent indeed. Ah, yes, David in New Mexico. Thank you. My apologies earlier. Thank you very kindly. That leaves $15 to meet Nydia's challenge. And, for this time of year, all I can say is that it's important that we keep things going just for bill-paying purposes and because, well, costs here go up. I think kerosene's like $3.99 a gallon. That's what we're doing these days. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious, finite time engaging in these little conversations. Yeah. That's true. Jack in Shreveport says, lukewarm. Might that word describe people who do not vote? I think it describes them with a particular accuracy. Indeed. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.